Hi, this is Towers, and you're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, BC. Diverse, independent, yours.
Sangi la.
Kwei.
Wai e beat nak seal.
Tan she.
Tanek e. Negat dakote.
This is Words and Culture, a series on Indigenous languages, funded by SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.
Segilas, good day and welcome to Season 2 of Words and Culture. My name is Christy Lane Sinclair. I'm a Haida Cree artist telling stories through creating music and film and podcasts, and belong to the Yakalonis clan in Old Macedon. Musically, I play guitar and sing slash scream, and sometimes can be found writing for choirs and collaborating with orchestras. Some call it classical grunge. Maybe I created that term and asked them to call it classical grunge. Anyway, I'm so excited to kick off the season by bringing you along to my homeland in Haida Gwaii. So Haida Gwaii is a rainforest, Canada's only rainforest. I did not fact check that, but I think it's correct. It's an archipelago that hangs underneath the Alaskan Panhandle. So from my tiny home in Macedon, I can see Alaska. Just to give you an idea of where it is, it's far. Haida people have inhabited our land since time immemorial. Our territory encompasses parts of Alaska, our Haida Galapagos, and its surrounding waters. Haida's pre-contact population was in the tens of thousands, dispersed throughout the islands in many, many villages. During the time of contact, our population fell to about 600. This was due to introduced diseases such as measles, typhoid, and especially smallpox. Today, Haida people make up half of the 5,000 people living throughout the islands. So to get started, let me tell you a bit about myself. I grew up in Prince Rupert, across the Heckett Strait from Haida Gwaii. I formally started coming home in my early 20s, but I knew instantly that this was my home. With a background in film and music, I was welcomed with open arms as a song carrier and artist, as well as to bear witness and document important events and legends. It was then that I found my spot that would fill the hole in my soul with purpose. But there was and is so much to learn, and you never stop learning. Even though at the time I mostly sang angry songs about ex-boyfriends, I would always be asked to perform at the family potlatches to share my gifts. From there, my passion for the language and the want and need to use my skills as a musician, sound engineer, and filmmaker have led to me building a recording studio in Old Macedon. As you will learn, the Haida language is not my greatest skill set, but I feel if I can learn it, anyone can, and if I can capture it and make it a part of everyday life, then I've done a good job. But it's a lifelong journey laden with very humble steps leading to hopefully giant strides.
Mother, she's a dog fair.
Okay, before we kick off season 2 and I take you to my ancestral home of Haida Gwaii, I want to share a song with you. And this is called Dogfish Woman. And dogfish is one of my clan animals, and it's based off a legend. To put it shortly, I guess it would be like, Dogfish Woman is the most powerful being who lives at the bottom of the ocean, and she can like pull people in and make them do whatever she wants. And I've always been like obsessed with it, and I felt like that story correlated a lot to maybe the relationship between my mother. Okay, not maybe. Totally the relationship with my mother. So when I wrote this song, I don't know, I kind of imagined myself singing it to other Haida daughters, other Haida women, and like matriarchs and women of high esteem, and like harnessing that power. And so the original version I recorded on the album before. But then I thought, usually everything's so orchestrated, I wanted to make it piano instead so you could really hear what I was talking about and like connect to it. Yeah, so here it is, Dogfish Woman.
Mother, she's a raven.
Thank you for listening, and I hope that you enjoyed Dogfish Woman. I know I had a good time making it, and let's move on. Let's go to the ancestral lands of Haida Gwaii. In this episode, I'm excited to share the journey of two brothers, Jolin and Gwaii Edenshaw. They're the sons of Chief Gdanska, aka Gujao. This is the Gdansta pole. This pole takes over a year. Together, they source the pole, mill it out, lay out the design, put the design to scale, and then begin to carve. From there, the master carvers refine and paint until it's finished. This is something that I find so powerful and historic. As a rock musician, it's also very punk rock. At one time, hundreds of Haida totems stood for so much. Clan lineage, mortuary poles, they signified events and held our legends. Each pole told its own story and had its own spirit. I can't imagine when we were stripped of this, and now we're here. In its entirety, the six-part series of Words and Culture will take you on a journey with me as I learn from some of my favorite people and hear some kick-ass stories. It actually does not only take a village, but all of the villages and all of the island, and then some, to bring something like this into fruition, something so huge. And there is an awe and beauty in that. Okay, I'm not gonna cry. Okay, let's go visit Jolin and Gwaii Edenshaw as they complete the Gdansta pole to honor their father, Chief Gdansta, or AKA Gujao, like Cher, Gujao.
So this is an old village site, Kakyals. I never knew too much about the site before this project. So the Skidans people, another name is Kakyals Kigoy, which means those born at Kakyals. So even though their village is away from here, how it works is you follow your mom's side. So a lot of the Skidans ladies would be married into this village, and so their children would be born here and then end up going back to Skidans later as they grew up. So the Skidans people have a big connection to this village. And I think definitely a goal of mine, and I think, you know, all of us as carvers enjoy putting the poles, you know, sort of back out in the old village sites and around in different areas, as opposed to, you know, it's always amazing to put one up in your own village too, but, you know, it's, this whole island is ours, right? So it's good to put them everywhere. So the bottom figure is sea grizzly, and he's holding a seal in his mouth. So you can see the sort of tail, sort of a whale tail coming wrapping around, and the fins coming off the arm of the grizzly, and then it's got sort of a traditional grizzly head, you know, sort of more in line with just what a grizzly would look like. The seal isn't a crest of theirs, but it's sort of a tell. So you could tell that it's a sea animal, as opposed to
a clue. It's a little clue.
Then above there, the main figure is a supernatural being upon whom it thunders, and he is the chief of the forest people, and his dressing up is the rainbow. So the rainbow is the crest of the Skidans people.
So hiders reside throughout the islands, but are concentrated in two main centers, Old Masset on the north end of Graham Island and Skidigit at the south end. So upon arrival to Masset, my first stop is Jolin's carving shed. And if you know anything about a carving visit, you bring food. So as I ordered 2 dozen Tim Hortons donuts in YVR, the lady looked up and said, "Hi, Degwai?" And I said, "Yep." My first reaction is the sheer beauty and rainbow colors used in the pole. I was just in awe and ran my hands all over. I had no questions at this point. It was just like such an honor to meet someone's art at any point, and this was like way beyond. The 500-year-old cedar was found and picked out by the brothers. From there, it was cut down and transported by their good pal Bonehead, who will continue to play a huge role in the pole's journey. Once at the carving shed, it took over a year to finish. The next morning, it was being moved to the village site, Kayal's, for the touch-ups and planning. I've never been here for this process, so while there are giant trucks and winches, that's only part of the delicate process of getting the pole onto the trailer. Haida Gwaii is built on family and community, and people kept showing up and helping out any way they could. At one point, it took everyone's weight to sit on the back end of the pole and balance it as they loaded it onto the trailer. Once it was on, it was about an hour plus journey to Kayal's. I don't really know the physics, except it was really cool to witness, but I did manage to ask Gwai, who put it much more eloquently than I can.
What we've got that's sort of a coup here is we've got this axle from a 9-ton pickup, and we've got it right on the balance point of this pole. So it being there, we can fairly easily move it around. So this morning when we moved it out of the shed and onto the truck, I think there were just 6 of us pushing it. Well, 2 mostly pushing it, but 6 people sort of managing the that movement. And it rolled quite easily, and we've still got it lined up. And so when we move it into position, we'll be able to just roll it down there, and then the ropes will go on, couple ropes behind, couple ropes in the front, and it'll just be manpower that pulls it up. You pull it up so far, and then you slack off on the back ropes, and it just pops into place. The trick is not getting too excited when you're pulling it up, because if the person who's raising it doesn't keep control over things, then people will start getting excited and run with it, and it could overcorrect. I haven't seen it happen, but yeah, I've seen people get overexcited. Yeah, and also you want them to stop, holding the ropes and applaud or anything like that when it's standing
I
up.
Have seen that. People seen start that, clapping. Yeah. They let go of the rope and start clapping.
I always wonder when artists know their work is complete. If I didn't have deadlines for the music or make strict deadlines or let people rip albums out of my ill-gripped, white-knuckled hands, I would still be working on my first album. So like me, the brothers are happy to have a prescribed time that they have to be finished their work. Otherwise, they would still be putting finishing touches on it for the next year, they said.
So our department really is the carving, and it's the Skidans people putting on the potlatch, and that's when the business will happen. So the pole itself is like a marker commemoration of what's the business of the potlatch.
Yeah, that's a good distinction to make. So the potlatch is not a celebration of the raising of the pole, but rather the pole serves to remind people into the future of what happened at the potlatch.
In the late 1800s, Haida culture was all but decimated. All totem poles and cultural items were banned, deemed sinful pagan idols by Christian missionaries. It was told that the poles were sent away to museums and sold to be preserved, but audio from my great Chinny, or grandfather in English, Chinny Joe Weir remembers the Haida were made to chop them down and burn them. It was told to be a very dark period without art. By 1900, smallpox decimated Haida by close to 90%, with only 350 to 600 surviving the epidemic that swept Haida Gwaii. Survivors moved into massive village and faced assimilation techniques that included residential school, language ban, prohibition of language practices, gathering in any kind of numbers, same old. In 1969, the people of Massive Village celebrate the raising of the first totem pole in nearly a century. 1969, to me, does not seem that long ago. Carved by Robert and Reg Davidson, this marked absolute ground zero for the resurgence of Haida culture. So, this is Jolin's sixth pole. He's worked on many others, but it's hard to describe the spirit and the strength that this pole emanates. If you're in a room with it, you feel it. To see it done, to touch it, and to witness, and to see it move from its home is like such a magical trip. There's also a lot of math and science to this, so let's listen as they prepare to move the Gdansk pole.
That's great.
Jeff, you probably have to move from there.
So it'll be,
Hi.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'll sit nicely on here. So what do you figure, Boathead?
Right? It should sit.
And these, like, we
these
can...
These flatten right out, don't they?
Yeah, we can twist them out.
Yeah. I tried that. I was like, whoa, this is pretty solid.
They are, yeah.
I was like...
If you get behind me, go...
Salt water sort of thing.
Yeah. But the... I've put, like, you can see, like, the blue paint here. I put a huge... We salvaged, like, this massive boat, but it was a V-hull, so we just sat the V right in here, and it just, like... It's probably no problem. So anyway, the main thing that I'll have to do is I got to think when I'm turning corners, right? Because we'll have a lot of swing, right? So we can just pull it in here.
Okay. Can we lift the wheels onto the deck here then?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Just in case we need them.
But yeah, we can lift the wheels on the back here, no problem. And then So what's the plan for loading it on here? Have you guys thought about that or no? Because we can use the crane.
Yeah, well, it's, we can roll it. Oh, it's not tall enough.
For?
I was thinking we could roll it. Or it's too tall. But we can like bend it and roll it up partway.
Yeah.
And then we could jack it up, move the wheels back. And then roll it up a bit more, and you can just sort of pull it along with
Yeah, because I can, exactly.
On this morning, I've invited myself to witness them ready the pole for transport. Many spill in and show up in the morning to help with the process. It's crazy to wrap my head around the fact that not long ago, all of this was illegal. Last night, I watched a short film directed by my cousin, Christopher Ochter. It's called Now is the Time. His short film tells a story of the first pole, with archival footage and the process of the pole being carved and raised. To see elders at the pole in 1969 wearing regalia that they made out of cardboard is really heavy, and it's really moving, and it is such a huge testament to the Haida way of being, Resilience is an understatement. There was such joy, but the pressure of this ground zero moment was not lost for a second. The energy that everyone put in is there this morning, and it's super powerful.
Yeah. I can lift 7,000 pounds right over the edge.
Oh, 7,000 pounds?
Yeah, but that's right over the edge. So at you know,
right at the deck.
Yeah, like.
Oh.
So.
Because that pole's under 7,000 pounds.
Yeah. Yeah. So I could unhook the trailer, come up next to it, and just lift it over.
I think we could just pull it up.
I think it'll just skid.
Yeah. Yeah. Right up. I think that's the way to do it. And then because we also got to think about the unload on the other end too, right?
Yeah.
Just tie it to a tree and drive away.
Yeah, pretty much.
But we'll just do the opposite. We'll get the wheels under it.
Yeah, exactly. So whatever.
Blocking, keep them until the wheels are where they need to be.
Well, we need Altostos jacks, eh?
Yeah. Well, they're short jacks, too. But we should take them anyways, just in case. We can't find other jacks.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, well, I'll just turn around. Maybe I'll put myself on that side of the road here. Right?
Yeah, just in case you have to unhook from the trailer at some point.
Yeah.
If you have to.
Do we need to bring those things? Or?
A totem pole is sacred, and the work to create one is sacred work. Before any of the real moving begins, a small prayer is said over the pole.
Okay, so if everyone can center themselves and Solana... Give us strength for today to be safe and move this beautiful work down to Skidigit and look after all of us as we move it, and give us strength to be able to move it and carry our hearts in this pole. And how is Solana?
Good job. Awesome. I thought you were going to say something along the line.
I was tempted. Oh, Lord. Yeah. So is there anything we can't grab?
No, but you can push from where?
Of course, there was always room for humor. It is what has gotten high to people through the most difficult and challenging times, and also not so difficult times. I think what I loved about this experience so far was what it felt like when you kind of had a backstage pass as a storyteller, but then you realize everyone is welcome. If you want to help with the pole, paint, hang, learn, it's an open door to all Haidas, and it's so beautiful, and that tradition is so intact. And that makes me, like, really super happy. So next time on Words and Culture, the Gdansk pole is raised by the community, and the potlatch that follows exemplifies how important all of this is to all Haida people. But before I go, I wanted to share a couple of Haida words with you from Jolin and Gwai and Gwalaga Heart, as they put the finishing touches on the pole.
Do you guys have a favorite Haida word?
Favorite Haida word?
Favorite Haida word?
Skooju might be a contender. I don't want to steal all the good ones. But I think Jala's got a better vocabulary than me, so I can take some...
How would you describe... If I had to?
Slick. Yeah. It's an expression of slickness. So if something is pretty hook, you can rest assured that it's pretty slick.
I don't know if I got a favorite Haida word. I'll just think of the dirty ones. I'm really just, you know, very beginner learner myself. But as I have been learning, you know, just having the imagery of words, how the language is made, gives you the how things look as you're talking about it and stuff. And, you know, I remember elders laughing around because they say, oh, it sounds... funnier, it sounds, you know, like sort of later, sort of figuring out why it was funny, you know, not knowing when I was younger, but and a lot of it is how the sound of words will be. It gives you like the image of what it looks like, and then, you know, and then obviously the there's all kinds of other things that might look that way or something that will get to give people a kick.
As a very beginner speaker of Haida language, or Haudkil, my passion is ongoing, and I feel like the language and art is a lifelong journey with no end. One foot in front of the other, and every humble step puts your footprint in our history and honors our ancestors that came before us. I'm so excited to continue this journey with you over the next episodes. Life-changing and so beautiful to share words and space with some of my heroes. However, for listening.
Words and Culture is made possible with funding from SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Words and Culture is produced by Kim Wheeler. Kaylin Belair is our audio engineer and editor.
Hausin Dang King Sam.
Maltus.
Ninuis Ahaha Miku Kwakwal.
Kachunautano. Wapamatin Mina.
Yo, this is Black Tai Chi, the mic conductor, and you're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM in B Baby, BC.
The Canadian Human Trafficking Hotline is now live to help victims and survivors get vital social and emergency services. If you need help or want to help stop human trafficking, call 1-833-900-1010.